All right, we are here. We are Galaxis and welcome. Oh yes, bright and early. So you have your morning brains on, right? To what extent they can get on. Morning brain, right? There's all sorts of things that the brain does during your day. There's a cycle that you have during your day. Your body does it automatically. Your body does a lot of things for you automatically. We're going to talk about that. Because you see, you decided to experience a great, exciting, wondrous adventure of consciousness. You were attracted to this beautiful blue planet. And all the experiment that was going on here, experiment of consciousness, you've been watching it. You've been watching it for thousands of years. Now, you don't recollect that, we know. Because by your choice of coming into physical embodiment, you also chose to go unconscious, to forget who you were. You chose to come and learn to create. Learned to discover. It's like you hid all the truth and all the knowing. And you came here and you search for it. Now you might wonder why you would do that. But you see, you did this so that you could assist a transformation that's happening on this planet. A healing that's happening for Mother Earth. You chose to come and help bring a certain level of consciousness to this planet. And you had to come to where the consciousness was. Now, originally there were some beings that, proto-humans, you might say. And thousands of years ago, we're not going to go into detail about this, but various star beings from some of your home planets came here and infused the DNA of the local inhabitants with their DNA, creating a blend, the humanoid and the star being, to create the human being. And it was always known that by doing so, that there was going to be a time in which this DNA would eventually assist that other DNA, the original DNA, to evolve and create a new species that would take its place in the cosmos amongst the organization and amongst the network of star beings and races. But the original inhabitants here were pretty ignorant of what was going on. And so becoming the human being, they just were able to process who they were. They were able to think, oh, I am something. I am an individual. And to learn to think, to feel, to experience, to taste the senses. And over the years, they lived quite beautifully in this incredibly abundant planet. This planet is very special because it has a higher number of species than virtually any other planet anywhere. It was part of the creative exposition. It's like you go to an exposition and everybody has a booth showing their greatest creative work, right? Well, here you are, the greatest creative work right here. And all these interesting different species, also many of those created through particular blends. So you have this whole background here that stepped in and did a few lifetimes to explore what was it like to have a physical lifetime, to be in one of these bodies, to go unconscious of who you were and to experience the senses. And there's so much curiosity about this place that so many star beings have come here and taken on physical bodies to experience the senses. You just don't have them the same way in other places. Yeah, you experience some kind of sensory input, but when you get into this type of dense physicality, there is a very interesting way of experiencing the sex, right? Sex is just an amazing experience. So some of you came here just to get that. Right? You knew that, didn't you? And some of you had lifetimes where it was basically just that, and maybe survive a bit and last a little while. You didn't have long lives. Well, at the beginning you did. But then there was a concern. There was a concern that we're not going to get into the details of it, but they brought bacteria and disease to this planet. And it shortened your lives as human beings. You have unusually short lives here compared to beings on other planets and systems. Most other planets and systems have lives that are maybe thousands of years, as, you know, relative to yours. And but here, you may have like 100 years. You're doing pretty darn good, right? So there was a part of the experiment that was the nature of time, to work with time. You compressed time. And so what you did is that you created a situation here where you can learn faster than anywhere else. You created a time envelope, so everything is speeded up here. And everything is slowed down simultaneously. We'll get into that tomorrow in more detail. But everything is sped up in the sense that evolution is very fast. You learn very, very fast. You may not think so, but that's relative perception. But compared to the way people learn, or individuals of various species and races learn on other planets, you learn like that. A snap and you get stuff. So it makes it really a lot of fun to come here and explore stuff, because you just get stuff so fast and things happen so quickly on this planet. You can go through a complete social revolution in 20, 30 years, which on another planet would take maybe 500, 600 years. That would be speedy on their planet. All right. So what it also does is it creates a need for you to have a physical vehicle that has energy and motivation, so that you can follow through on your creative projects. You came to create from scratch. You came to learn how to create. You could go to a school and learn to create anywhere else. Most other beings go to creation school and they learn how to create things and create realities and things like that. But they know who they are. So basically they focus on things in a kind of a different detail. They focus on creating different species, and they focus on creating different weather patterns and ecosystems and that kind of thing. But what you wanted to create was something different. You wanted to create creation. You wanted to learn how to create. You wanted to learn how to be free to go beyond form. You wanted to create in love. And frankly, a lot of beings don't do that. You have so much love on this planet, and all of the intensity that comes with an emotion, a state that is involved and engaged in love. The intensity of love and passion and sex and anger and fear. The intensity of your emotional states and your beingness here are all part of the rapidity of time, the speed of time, the compression. At the same time, in the moment, when you are more in the present, you slow things down so you can take things apart and see how you created them. Because you created this, co-created it with a whole group of beings. We call it your team. Your team and higher aspects of yourself, in conjunction with divine plan, all very harmonious, very wondrous, created this whole system of illusion for you to come and play and explore in. An incredible system. And you've had your lifetimes, and you've come at this point in space-time at a critical juncture on the planet for consciousness, and you wanted to come and participate at some level. There are three levels of participation. The first level is to observe it, not to really do much about it, but to observe it. And through your observation mechanisms, through the senses, and through your chakras, the energy centers of your body, you register information which is picked up by your spiritual family. Your spiritual family, which mostly is not physical, but you are a representative of that family, which comes from that particular planet. Very often, your spiritual family, and for most of you, your spiritual family has been here colonizing the planet, but most have left. Not because they've ascended and you're the poor jerk who's left, right? No. No, it's because basically they've ascended and they asked for volunteers who'd be willing to come and really and roll up their sleeves and get dirty and kind of get into an adventure and go into the jungle and, you know, and really make some difference. And you decided that that sounded exciting. You wanted to travel and see things, you know? You wanted to have adventures. You wanted to learn and explore. So your natural temperament drew you back here. And you are a representative. So to them, to your spiritual family members, you're very important. They're putting a lot of attention on you. So if you're an observer and you register these things, they go into your chakra systems. These are picked up by certain etheric connections to your spiritual family members and registered there so that they all are getting the experience of physicality kind of vicariously through you. And they're able to therefore stay connected with you and support you and give you energy, give you strength, give you a sense of oomph for your mission, for your motivation to help you to do what you have to do or do what you have chosen to do. So you're the one who is the representative. It, in a sense, it's a very high-level position of honor, although you may not know that because you don't know, you don't have the connection consciously on this side with your spiritual family members. But you would not really have survived very well if they hadn't been working for you. They hold a lot of energy in your DNA, a lot of programs that are positive to assist you in your educational experience, to assist you in learning, to assist you to open up. So if you're observing, you're sending them information. So don't think that that's a passive experience. People who are observing, some of them feel guilty. We've had people say, you know, I feel kind of like I should be doing more for the planet. I should be doing more. And we're saying, well, you know, you're sending a lot of information back to your family and they are working with it and they're doing sending certain frequencies into the earth plane and they're doing this and they're doing that and so forth and so on. And so they're able to work with some of the energies because of your observations. But, you know, if you want, you do more. The second level is that you observe and at the same time, you are able to then help other people and connect with other people and create bonds of love and caring. You create social networks with people. Now, a lot of times people look down on social networking, right? They say, well, you know, if you're spiritual, you know, it's like social network is not so important. That's just socializing. That's not as important as all the doing the mission and doing the teaching and putting together the forms and structures to get this consciousness on the planet. But we would say that it's the foundation, the network, because all of you are part of a very big network of light beings. You're still not fully aware of it, But in the coming years, you're going to be more and more aware of it. And you'll be able to work more consciously with it. You'll be able to get more sustenance, more strength, more support from your network. Most of the network is not physical. Many networks are physical, and they may not be physically proximate to you. You may be part of a network with people on the other side of the planet as well as people nearby. You may have some members of your spiritual family here on the plane with you. You may connect with them. They're people that you feel unusually close to when you meet them. You just feel like, I've known this person a long time. It's like they're so comfortable. There's a sense of just really caring, out of the blue, just right away, caring about them and what happens to them and vice versa. There's a sense of connectedness when you find spiritual family people on the side. And they may not be at the same, what you may say, spiritual evolutionary level as you either, because they may be observing something different. So don't expect them to be in your spiritual network here necessarily. You have physical family members, some of which may be your spiritual family members, most of which are probably not. Because you need to learn some of the twists and turns of human existence as part of your own process. You see, as a representative of your spiritual family, you're making this network. That's level two. Level three, you're actually being the inspiration or leading or teaching or sharing or that kind of thing. So in that sense, you are more participating outwardly, right? And so the ones that you perceive that are really doing the work, quote unquote, is because they're fulfilling a form that to you says, hey, look, they're doing the work. But all of you are doing the work. You're doing the work when you're working on yourself. You're doing the work when you're working in meditation on anything and you're sending light and love anywhere to anybody, anywhere on the planet. You're doing your work. Now, it's up to you how much further than that, how far do you want to go in doing your work? You know, how do you want to do it in the big form? Not everybody wants to do that. Do you want to do it quietly in meditation? It's up to you. But don't feel guilty if you're not out there writing books and being in the media and being on Oprah or whatever. You know, it's not for everyone, right? And doesn't necessarily mean that that one is doing a more important job than you are. You all are doing amazing, amazing work, which you will be awakening more and more to, and some of you are already kind of getting a clue about it. Some of you already know that you're part of a network. You're aware that at night, when you dream, and you remember dreams, in which you and a whole bunch of people are doing stuff. If you are remembering dreams in which you're very busy with social activities, then know that you're working on stuff all around the planet, that these are part of your team. They are probably other physical people or they are people that you're working with on the other levels, and you're getting together and doing a lot of stuff. All right. So there's a lot of ways that you're working, not physically per se, but energetically. Now, simultaneously, by your having engaged into the physical body, you also engaged into the process of being human. And you're also simultaneously in your own mission of personal ascension, that is kind of the common term for it, where you come to the conclusion of lifetimes, where you come to conclude lifetimes and conclude birth and death and conclude those cycles and step free of the limiting restraints of that form, where you would be able to step into any body at will. You could live as long as you wanted and in whatever body and whatever form you wanted. You're going that direction, you see. But you're coming to a place to where if you don't want to come back to this beautiful planet, you don't really need to. You're wrapping up your personal mission. You're wrapping up your global mission as well. That's why this is a very pivotal time, and we're so excited to be speaking with you at this time. Now, that said, we want to turn your attention to the process of being physical. We call it the nature of embodiment. Right? You are this absolutely unlimited light being. When you're not in physical body, when you don't have a point of attention currently in a physical body, you are capable of accessing all the wisdom of the universe. You're capable of going anywhere by thought, doing anything with anyone, creating, playing, doing whatever. Now, in this incredible state of freedom, you might wonder, why in the world would I take on embodiment? Because by embodiment, you had to take a piece, just a tiny piece of who you were, and take that piece in focus and put it in a dense physical form. So you're functioning here, you know, on like, as far as who you are as a consciousness, if you're bringing 1% into your focus of attention at this time, you're doing pretty well. But you also are putting a lot of energy into this experience. You may be putting tremendous psychic, spiritual energy up to maybe 10-20% of your vastness. And that's hard to say because your vastness approaches infinity. So it's hard to put a percent on it anyway. But you're able to put a certain sizable amount in energy to sustain your form, to sustain your consciousness, to sustain your mission. It's in a form of love. You love yourself. It's a given. It's natural. You may have been trained to not care about yourself or think badly about yourself. That's part of the training you get. But still underneath it all, deep underneath it all, you still love yourself, or you would not have stayed. You would not have survived. But you did. And that's a success. So embodiment. You chose to take on a physical form. This physical form was created and co-created by you, with you. And there is a certain essence of spirit that is in your body. It's as if it has its own essence. It has its own consciousness. You and it entered into a partnership agreement that it was going to be your vehicle, that it was going to enable you to experience the senses. It was going to enable you to have this extraordinary play, extraordinary journey. It was going to enable you to do the work that you wanted to do here. And your physical body of every lifetime is perfectly adapted to the issues, the themes, the foci of learning, the level of evolution that you want to express in that lifetime. You don't get a body by mistake. It's really created specifically for you. There's a huge team that works on it to get the DNA just right. You and your team select your parents because of their background, what kind of damage they can do you. That's nice and juicy, right? What kind of gifts and strengths they can give you. What kind of DNA, intriguing DNA that you can work with. You spend time looking and searching and paying attention and finding the right combinations. Sometimes you arrange it on the other side with certain beings. Generally you do. And you say, oh, look, and this is way before you come in. This is when they're coming in. Very often, you know, they're young. They're nowhere near thinking about having a child. And you're like, talking with a part of them that's on the other side, and you're saying, look, this would be a really good coordination. How would this fit in your themes of what you would like to experience in your life? Would you like an ungrateful child, you know? How would you like that, you know? Or maybe just a really rebellious, you know, rambunctious child. Would you like one of those? A real brat, right? Or how about this? You'd like a really refined New Ager that's going to challenge all your beliefs about religion. Hmm? What? What do you want? Yeah? And you sat down and figured things out, and some of them said, you know, I really believe in what your mission is. I'd be really willing to support you in that. And say, great, okay, so this is what you're going to do, and here's what I'm going to do. And you laid out the general rules, the general ideas, the general plan, right? So they went on and lived their life and so on, and then later on had you. And you came in, and your body is constructed using their DNA, using energies and forces and so forth that is compatible with the themes and the issues and so on that you want to play with. Create a spirit. It's not really a soul like yours. It's more a kind of an essence. It's similar to the kind of spirit that is in material plane things. It's similar to certain rocks. They have spirit. They have a certain essence. They can communicate. They have intentions. Their concept of time is very different from yours. Rocks have like, okay, is it millions of years? Okay, that's no big deal. That's a nice life. I'll sit here for a million years, you know. But there's so much that they're doing. But in a sense, the physicalness has certain essence. It can communicate. It has its own being. Now, most people are trained to think, because your Western religion looks out, and religious background, and most of the major religions in the world look out the physical body as some kind of slab of meat that, okay, you know, you have to use. He'd just be so spiritual if it wasn't for this slab of meat that you just have to drag around with you. And all those senses that get you into trouble all the time. Right? So the attitude that you've gotten, distorted and twisted as it is, has given you very distorted opinions about your own body. You don't realize that it's a friend, it's a partner that you're co-creating with, that you're working with. You tend to look at it as this, okay, it's a slab of meat, and my soul and spirit is enlivening it, and just enough to do whatever we need to do, until whew, finally we're done, and we can leave and go fly in the heavens and have a good time again. Well, your body doesn't appreciate that. It's like, well, hello, listen to me, listen to me. And because you're trained not to, at some point in your life, you listened, you know, when you were a child, probably, you know, your body says, oh, I'm cold, and you'd cry. So your mother would come put a sweater on you. Oh, you know, you worked with your body in that point. But when you got old enough to be taught your conscience or your moral structure or the philosophy of your parents or the philosophy of your culture, the body, taking care of the body wasn't really a part of it. Being a partner with your body wasn't part of it. You didn't realize that your body has several purposes here. And it wants to serve you in these purposes. It's its mission. First, its first purpose for you. Your body wants to support you in your mission. Whatever you need to do to gain your consciousness, to do the work you need to do, your body comes to support you. And most of you take it for granted. Okay, that's all right. Body, you know, you drive yourself by your mind, you know. You think, okay, here's what I want to do. I want to do this, this, and this. And you just assume the body's just going to willingly come along. You just take it for granted. It's got to come along because that's what I'm going to do. Don't realize that it volunteered to do this. You know, when you, if you're an employee and you have employer with employees, you know, and the employer can tell the employees what to do and generally treat them kind of poorly. But in your culture, it's kind of a tradition to have the boss, you know, not treat the employees all that well or whatever. In the lesser consciousness of business situations. But if you're, for example, on a mission, if you have a volunteer effort and there's a coordinator and there are volunteers, these people are volunteers. They're there voluntarily. You don't treat them like employees. Otherwise, you get them all very antagonized. And you create too much dissension in your project. So generally, if you're a supervisor of a project, of a, let's say, some kind of good mission, good deed kind of thing, you know, the soup kitchen or serving hungry children or whatever it is, some beautiful mission, some beautiful, helpful, idealistic mission, and you have people volunteering, you know, like at an animal shelter or something beautiful and helpful. You don't go around, the supervisors generally don't go around and scold them and treat them like little idiots. Otherwise, they quit. They're not employees. They're not desperately in need of funds. You're not controlling them by money. They're there as volunteers. You generally treat them as part of a team working together. Well, your body is a volunteer. It's not your employee. It's not the dregs of the dregs, okay? It's not just the automatic slab of meat that just has to be there. It is a partner for you. And you need to recognize that and come to terms with it. Because some of you have spent so much time on the other side that being in a physical body is a very strange and disorienting experience for you. Some of you have not had that many physical lifetimes. You dipped in and like, ooh, wow, gosh, what a strange experience. And so you decided that what you would do to train yourself on how to be physical was to take imprints. So you got downloads and imprints of other lifetimes. So when you do other lifetime work, you know, if you do regressions, some of this that you're looking at is actually imprints, not actually lifetimes you've physically led. But there's really no difference in their reality because it's all illusion anyway. So the imprints are just as useful as real, quote-unquote, lifetimes. But you get enough so you have an idea on how to function in the physical plane. But still, there's that part of you that still wants to soar and fly and has a bit of a hard time staying here. Part of that has to do with your training again. Part has to do with that religious training of the Western mind, which says you and your body are separate. The mind and the body are not one. That means you and your body are not a partnership. You're separate things, but you're not working together as a partnership. You're the dominant one. You're the one who's going to dominate your body. You're going to tell it what to do. And in this atmosphere, your body gets rebellious. It wants to support your mission. And so it will work really, really hard. But if you don't take the proper care of it in communion with it and respecting it and listening to it, then you will miss some of the work that it's doing for you. The body also has a mission to provide you sensory experience. So you can experience sex and passion and pleasure, pain, excitement, fear, anger, rage. You can experience the whole gamut. And it gives you sensory input so that you can feel things in your body. You can feel the senses. You're fascinated by your senses. so you can hear and see and smell and taste and touch. You also have other expanded psychic senses and energy senses. And your body helps with that too. Because if you're not grounded and centered with in connection with your body, you can't tune into that either. You have to have a good connection with your body to function as a whole being. But it wants to get you that experience. The third aspect of your body's mission for you is, of course, to provide the form. This is the obvious one. The form that stays in a certain chemical and structural balance and in balance with your environment so that you can interact with your environment. It's the one that's continuously getting the reference points of yourself, of your motivations, of what you feel, and of your environment. Your body is the one who's kind of bouncing this stuff off of you. The body is kind of the one that holds the connection between the you and your body. In between your you and your body, there's also your ego. Your body holds the ego in the proper place too. You have to hold the ego in the proper place, proper orientation. The body also holds the ego in proper orientation with perceptions. Now, the body's job is vitally necessary. You can't function on the physical plane without it. But because at a certain point you began to disregard it, you began to use it as your storehouse, your dumping ground. If you had emotions that were unpleasant and you didn't know what to do with them and you had to kind of ignore them, you thought, and that's a way to deal with it, you stashed them in your energy field. Your body's energy had to be mobilized on various levels because your body also has an etheric energetic as well. Not all physical, material, visible. Your body has different layers. It has etheric layers and stuff too. And so it has to hold these energies, hold these vibrations and frequencies of these things that you're not dealing with. And it takes energy of your body to do that. So it basically has the, what we call a storage bay for you. And when you don't want something and you don't want to deal with it and you won't let it go, the body has to put it in the storage bay and use energy to keep it, you know, air conditioned, whatever, you know, keep it preserved. And that takes a certain amount of energy to keep it under there, keep it stashed. So it doesn't keep popping out. Because basically the job of the body is to take everything through the senses, flow it into your consciousness so that you can play with it. If there's something you don't want to be conscious of, then your body has to use extra effort to create drag and resistance to hold it back so it doesn't come out. So the more that you stash in there, the more energy that of your whole system is engaged to keep it stashed and keep it preserved and keep it down. That's why a lot of people, when they go to sleep at night or when they lose their inhibitions because you have to let go in order to go to sleep, that sometimes your worries come up, sometimes issues of the day that are not resolved will show up, pop, pop, pop to the surface just as you want to go to sleep. People who drink alcohol, they will lose their inhibitions at some point. They have so much stashed in there, they can't put any more in there at the time. And by drinking alcohol, it creates a whole different chemistry in the body. The body cannot keep the stuff down. So stuff starts to come up. And then you see the angry drunk, and you see the drunk who gets very weird and bizarre and stuff. Says weird stuff. You know, you can see these kinds of things. And it also is true with certain recreational drugs will let loose and weird stuff comes out. Now you can use it positively, of course. As if you're using it as a conscious evolution tool, you can use psychotropic substances and that to activate the opening of this repression, the gates of repression, to let stuff come up from your body so that you can review stuff from your past and awarenesses and acknowledgements and ahas, and you can get a lot of understanding about yourself as the body releases some of its storehouse for you. This is a very useful job of your body. But the thing is that your body has a lot of needs too. It needs to be taken care of. It desires love too. And frankly, you are not trained to love your body. You are not trained to take care of your body. So your experience of embodiment has various twists and distortions and turns. And what it does, it creates a body that's not really very happy. Now, when your body's happy, you know what that feels like? Do you know how glorious it is when your brain is on and your energy is flowing and you feel light and free and energy is just infinite? And whatever, and you just want to just dance with joy and ecstasy and passion just flows through your body. That's what your body wants to do for you. That's what it wants to provide for you. But it's a partnership, and you've got to take care of it so it'll do that. All right, so one of the ways to work with your body, to reconnect with your body, first is to recognize that it has some needs and recognize where you have ignored those needs. Or where you have gone for your mind and its needs and repressed the body's needs or given the body something it really didn't want. First of all, the body, of course, needs oxygen. You need to breathe. Your major way of communing with your body is through breath. That's why so many yogic techniques and so many meditation techniques, so many powerful techniques involve breath, because that gets your body online with you. If you're storing toxic emotional junk in your body, the amount of energy of your body that is used to hold that stuff in place is oxidizing. In other words, it's an aging process. If you have emotional garbage in there. So you want to acknowledge what you have emotionally and stay current and stay present emotionally. In other words, deal with stuff. Don't let stuff go away. Don't just say, okay, I'm just going to sleep in the morning, you know, it's going to be fine. Because it's overnight, it sinks down and the body clicks it into place in the storeway. And so in the morning, you don't have as much access to your emotions as you did the day of the emotional event. Now, sometimes if the emotional event is real traumatic, you don't really have much option. It's just, you're just too exhausted or too stressed with the circumstances. But at some point, you need to catch up with it. So keep yourself emotionally current and breathe. Many of you have forgotten how to breathe. Many of you breathe through your chest, or you hunched over at the computer, like the channel, and just hunched over. And when you hunch over, if you slump over, you notice that your rib cage kind of sinks down in the front. It creates a band across your breastbone area, bottom of the rib cage, that kind of squeezes the air. Now, the way to breathe that's natural for the body, if you ever watch a child breathe, it's belly breathing. The belly expands down here. If you're slumped over, you can't breathe down here. You've closed it off. So you breathe in your chest. When you breathe in your chest, the message to your body is anxiety. You breathe in your chest, you're trying to rev up energy to deal with stress. You're stressed. You're trying to activate. You're excited or hyper about something. That's why people who get into hyper breathing, you know, if they're getting to very heavy chest breathing. The relaxed, balanced breathing is down in the base. Some people can't really even breathe there anymore. Deep breathing is restorative to your body. It keeps the channels open, keeps the channels flowing. The body needs water, adequate water, not too much, not enough. And for that regulation, the body has provided you very nicely with a thirst mechanism. That if you haven't distorted it with by doing something to get your blood sugar out of whack, because when your blood sugar is out of whack, then when you get thirsty, you tend to eat because you think you're hungry. And you're not. You're thirsty. But you can't perceive it correctly. When your blood sugar or your glycolation or whatever, the sugar processes in your body are out of balance. So what you want to do is practice breathing and you want to pay attention to thirst. Right? Okay. Now your body wants food. Frankly, your body doesn't want really a lot of food. Most people eat way more than the body really wants. If you want to know how much food your body really wants, ask your body, what food do you want? Let your body tell you. Now, most people say, oh yeah, right, my body's going to say pizza. Right? Ice cream. No, that's your mind. That's your addictions. If you have a food addiction, if you have food cravings, you and your body cannot seem to communicate much about food at all. You want to listen to your body. Your body wants something healthy, but in moderation. Anytime you go to a restaurant, you generally overeat. If you finish what's on your plate, you've overeaten generally. Unless you go to one of those really fancy schmancy restaurants where they give you little teeny tiny portions and teeny tiny sauce on a teeny tiny portion and charge you an exorbitant amount for it, you know. But even there, sometimes the body says, you want me to eat that? Okay. Body's generally game. It'll experiment. But it knows what it likes. It knows what works for it. If you eat something the body doesn't like, you'll react. After the meal, your heart rate will increase. You'll be sniffing or something. You'll have swollen eyelids, lower eyelids, right there. It'll swell right there. It's kind of looks like a, you know, like you've got what is it? If you get a hit, you know, you get a shiner. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a shiner there, right under the eye, on the inside part, just underneath the eye, just right next to the nose there, and the lower eyelid. There'll kind of be a shiner. It'll be a little blue and shiny, or gray and shiny. Your body will tell you, I don't like that. Your skin color won't look good. If you eat too much grains and your body doesn't want grains, your skin will get pasty color. It won't get a healthy color. So your body has messages for you. But what we would recommend is for you to sit down and think, okay, what is the most healthy meal that I think that I would feed my body? And knowing all the education you've gone through over the years and in your culture promoting good diets and so forth and so on, we'd suggest that you put together a really good diet meal. And sit down to it, beautiful, wonderful steamed veggies with maybe, you know, this and that and whatever that you think is really, really healthy. And you sit down and present it to the body. And you stay very present with the body and let the body, and you eat a bite and you chew it thoroughly. And let the body get all the savory capacity out of it to really taste it, to be present with it. To experience it sensually. It's fulfilling its mission. It wants to experience the senses. It wants to give you sensory experience. So let the body do that. Let it chew really thoroughly. Then another bite. Chew really thoroughly. And another bite. There'll come a point, maybe only after 3 or 4 bites, the body says, "Oh, now that was very nice. Thank you very much. We can go now." And you go, "What? I've prepared this and this and this, and I've even had dessert coming." It's like you have a guest that comes over and will just pick at the food and not really eat it that much. You think, "Oh, after all the work I did, you know, they should clean their plate and say, 'Oh, fantastic.'" Or that's what maybe you think you need to do when you go as a guest to someone else's house. But let your body determine how much you eat. It may say, "That's enough for now." "What? I only had 4 bites." "Yes," says the body. But you see, food is not just the only thing that runs your body. Your body runs on etheric energies. Food, it needs a little bit of food, but not much. It doesn't really need that much. Maybe a few bites here, and then a couple hours later, a few bites there. Now, we're not saying that you're ready to do that now. We know you're not. Because you've entrained yourself, and you've gotten now your body chemistry all adapted to having to handle the type of diet that you eat and so forth. But just for an experiment sometime, just let your body tell you, "Okay, I've had enough." And you can say to the body, "Well, maybe you have, I haven't, and I'm not really ready to be there yet." Apologize to the body. You know, I hear and feel what you're always telling me. And maybe at some point I'll go there and I'll aim in that direction. But for now, I feel like I've got to eat more. I have this belief that I've got to eat more because I've got to go and work now and I need fuel. So I've got to fill up my tummy so it doesn't gurgle and give me problems later when I'm not around food. "Okay," says the body. It's used to being ignored. It's used to. But if you tell it, if you communicate with it, it's so much more appreciative. It's so grateful for that. It's not like it wants a lot. It's not like you. You want reality. You want consciousness. You want God, Goddess, all that is. You want to go home. You want to experience light and love and everything. And the body wants to experience good things too. But it doesn't have that level of mission. Its level of mission is just to support and love you. It's like your pet, you know. It has a certain simplicity to its love. Right, so it needs air, good air, belly air. Polluted air, oh, the body's, okay, more stuff to stash. You know. But air and water, good water. Water, hopefully, with a little bit of minerals in it or something, so the body doesn't get too depleted. And food, good food. Now it needs other things too. It needs sensual pleasure. Now you think that, "Oh, goody, you know? Here's a place where we can really get on the same page here." But you'd be amazed how much you deny yourself. How much you get in your heads. But that's part of your training. Your culture says get in your head. Or if you get into your sexuality, you overdo it. You kind of overload your attention there. And that's like a food addiction. You can have sexual addiction. Any extreme is not really what the body really likes. The body loves pleasure, but what the body loves the most is love. When you love yourself, the body hums happily. Ah, la, 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 ah, la, 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 it says, happy, 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 happy. When you love yourself. Because when you love yourself, you treat yourself really well. And you clear out your emotions. You stay present. You stay current. You respect and honor what you feel. And you deal with it. You don't overload yourself. In your culture, the tradition is to overload your body and to keep ignoring it and to use it as a stash place, become a couch potato, build it up all around you to buffer yourself. And your body will do that. It'll buffer you from the onslaught of life. If you have lots of fears, your body will build up extra weight, or it'll get tense, or it'll get hard or dry. It'll provide what you want it to. But in your culture, the object is that you abuse your body. And one day, finally, the body will complain and you'll die. Okay? One day it's like, I don't know what to do. And you go to the hospital and cancer. Or you have a stroke or a heart attack or whatever. It's finally the body's message is, okay, I've had enough. You got to take care of me or I'm quitting this partnership. That's why for a lot of people, cancer is a wake-up call or some kind of disease or a horrible condition, a wake-up call. Okay, what do I need to do to honor the body? Now, in your culture, nobody even thinks about that. Okay, let's go to the hospital. Let's deal with the doctor. Let's get some drugs, some surgery, some radiation, or whatever, blah, 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 blah. Do you think the body likes that? You know, the rate of cancer, the extension of people living from, let's say, breast cancer, the statistics of people from diagnosis to death. The statistics show a slight increase. But guess what? It's because people are diagnosing it at earlier stages. There is really no gain of lifespan with every technique that modern medicine has. Some people live, some people die. Medicine doesn't understand the difference. They have statistics. Your body's not a statistic. But they know that a certain number of bodies are just going to die. When? Well, they think that if you get it earlier, this will help. Actually, it doesn't. Sometimes it actually makes it worse. Because you're going to live in the knowing that you have cancer for a longer period of time before you die. That's a bit. That's all. But for some people, cancer is the wake-up call where they begin to realize how to live, how to truly live. And that's why we want to talk about that, how to truly live. How do you communicate with your body? How do you talk to your body? If you have an agenda, we talked last night about agenda. The agenda is that, okay, I want people to see me as smart, important, valuable, industrious, productive, loving, caring, whatever. Right, of course. I want people to see me that way. As cool, as really, savvy, fashionable, whatever. You have these desires for people to see you that way. So you deck your body out. You treat your body in certain ways to promote this image of yourself. Anytime you use a motivation that's not true to you or has a perceptual falsehood inherent in it. In other words, you are beautiful. You are wonderful. You are savvy. You are intelligent. But you don't think you are, and so therefore you think you have to put on a facade that you are to prove to other people that you're valuable enough to love, to give money to. when you do this, you've set yourself up with a negative motivation, because that's an agenda. That has a conflict in it. And in order to motivate yourself to appear grand in front of everybody else, you have to push yourself. You have to pretend. You have to put on a good face. You put on your social face. You put on your professional face. You put on this image. When you go for anything other than loving yourself more, doing your mission with joy and fun and happiness and learning how to create, when you do other agendas, it's stressful for your body. It oxidizes your body. It ages your body. It puts stress in your body, and your body has to handle it. One of the ways that you really stress your body badly is through walking. Now, you may think, walking? That's a healthy thing to do. Yes, it is. But what if your structure's not right? What if you have a twist in your ankle? Then you walk and you walk and you walk. It's a repetitive motion disorder. You twist your knee, and then it twists your hip, and then your spine starts to twist, et cetera, et cetera. And pretty soon, your whole structure is out of balance. What if you have an out of balance place in your spine and you sit all day? Then your head and your neck has to compensate all day for that. And so your cranial bones get out of alignment, your neck is out of place, your neck hurts, your shoulders hurt, your back gets this way and that way. And your hips get sore, your coccyx gets bent, you know. Things that you do consistently, repetitively, time over time over time over time, is damaging to your body. Give your body a little variety if you can. Your body's sitting there while you're working, plugging away at the computer, at the desk, or doing whatever you're doing. And the body's saying, can we take a break now? Please, can we take a break? I'd like to stretch. Please, I'd like to run up the hill. Could we just run up the hill and I'd like some sex. When are you going to pay attention to me? I need to be fed. The body's going to talk to you. And you know, you've trained yourself to shut it up, right? I have to sit here another 3 hours and 15 minutes. Now, part of your consciousness trip is to arrange your life in such a way that it is healthy for you and your body. So, orient yourself to your work so that you can give your body some breaks, so you're not doing a repetitive motion disorder. Typing, as is a really well-known one, people have carpal tunnel and all that kind of thing from doing too much typing. Leaning over and doing something like seamstress. Oh, look out, dentists. Oh, my, what they have to go through. Because they're twisted over to the side and reaching down all day. Do you think the body likes that? They're going to have scoliosis, curvatures. So give your body a chance to enjoy its movement. Body needs movement. It needs flexibility. It needs flow. And listen to it, because it's going to say, no, I don't want to stay anymore. My eyes are hurting. They want to close. We need to go to sleep now. Come on now. It's like 12:30. Let's close off the computer now, please. Let's go to sleep. That's an example from the channel's life. So listening to your body is going to be critically important. It needs movement. It needs a certain sense of freedom. It needs to exalt in its physicality. You need to enjoy being physical. Some of you resent it terribly. that you have to be physical and be so limited in the body. And some of you are experiencing pain. When the body's in pain for a long period of time, it crumbles. It kind of droops. It hangs its head, so to speak. It feels very, very small. To reverse that, you have to really open up the love of the body. You have to give it more sensual pleasure. You have to compensate for the pain. You need to give it more love and attention and give yourself more love. Anytime you give yourself more love, claim who you are, your body is happier. If you can move, the body's happier. Balance. The body wants you to have a balanced life. And it will support you in your mission. It'll be there when you need it. If you chronically overeat it, overfeed it, overdrink it, overstuff it, oversit it, overdrive it. Oh, look, if you're going to be successful, you have to push and drive. Ta-da, ta-da. Body's not going to be too happy about that. How do you communicate with your body? How do you listen to it? Can you hear it talk to you? Can you hear its messages? Can you love your body? It's not sinful, you know? In your culture, embedded in your unconscious mind, is the concept of body as sinful, as evil. It's not. When you're in a culture like that, it's really hard not to displace your body and put the focus of attention in your mind and drive your body with your mind. All right, what we're going to do now is we're going to take a little break. And during this break, well, we have one more thing to say. The body needs to detox itself. It needs detoxing. When you start the detoxing process, the body will gleefully let stuff come to the surface. So if your detoxing comes through the form of pain, you're going to have more pain. If it comes through the form of digestive disturbances, you're going to have more digestive disturbances. If you have it in the form of headaches, you're going to have more headaches. Where your favorite stash spots are is where you're going to feel the greatest release and ultimately the greatest freedom. So think about, where do you stash it? What organs? What skeletal muscular structures? Where do you like to put it? What chakras do you like to stash it in? Where in your body are your favorite stash spots? Where you put stuff back in there? Because later on, what we're going to do is we're going to take you on a meditative journey in which you and your body are going to make peace with each other. And you're going to make a new agreement, a new contract. A new contract of embodiment that is in alignment and congruence with your mission. So what level of mission are you on? Do you allow your body to fulfill you on all its levels of mission? Do you love yourself? Do you love your body? Where do you stand with it? What do you need to release out of it? From where? So think about these kinds of things while we're on a break. Okay, we're going to do a break for about 20 minutes. When we come back, we'll do questions and answers. You know, if you have questions, and we'll work on this particular topic some more. That's where you kind of talk to us about embodiment and your themes of embodiment. All right, so here we are. So 20 minutes, and we'll see you shortly. Farewell.